to tie it. Look out here. Here he comes. There he goes. Brandon Banks is going to take this one to the house again. Unbelievable, this guy. Brandon Banks scores. Touchdown, Terrence Tolliver.
That was sick.
Don't go away, Matt Dunnigan.
That was sick right there. The timing of that throw, I mean, that was beautiful. That resembled Zach Kolaris from last year.
Ray has a tip, and it's Simone Lawrence again! Exclamation point! Touchdown!
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, lots to talk about. You and I just sat down and talked about all things we're going to talk about this week. And I said to you, every time we sit down, I figure, oh man, we're not going to have much to talk about. And then something happens, and like, it was a news explosion. We're recording this on Monday night. It was like a news explosion today. So much stuff to get to. Let's start by talking Ticats, as we always do, Mike. And let's start with some minicamp talk. Minicamp was last week. That's pretty exciting. No, it means football is just around the corner.
Yep, that's always the starting point of this, you know, when you're ready to get the season going is minicamp, and you start to get really excited. So I'm pumped for the main training camp to get started. So let's do this thing.
Yeah, less than a month until main camp starts, and it feels like just yesterday that the Grey Cup was handed out, and everyone was lamenting how long it's going to be till the season starts, and here we sit. It's yep. May 1st, sitting recording a show. We're going to be watching football before we know it, buddy.
That's I was getting my fix a little bit, probably about a week ago, watching some arena football online, so I'm hurting.
We need that CFL fix. Good. Speaking of minicamp, like, I don't want to go too much into it. I didn't go to any of the practices. There wasn't a ton of news coming out of it. It was a lot of rookie players and first-year guys the team was getting a look at. We're going to talk about some players that were released a little later. That's kind of what the Ticats use their minicamp for. Some teams use it to, like, for a full team thing. But the Ticats tend to use it more as almost like a rookie camp, essentially. So there was some news, though, and this isn't Ticats news really. This rumor started floating around that the Ticats and the Red Blacks had both violated CFL mini camp rules by having more than 40 players attend their camp. I saw this pop up on social media and I started doing a little digging, and I could find nothing in the CBA or in any of the bylaws that I could find that said anything about a limit on the roster sizes for mini camp. But apparently this is some rumor of impropriety against the Ticats and Red Blacks that started on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders fan forum. And I know going to a fan forum and expecting, you know, hard-hitting reporting and facts is wrong, but it starts to, I wonder, where do people hear this information? And it gets regurgitated, and everyone that I saw post something about it on Twitter, I asked, like, okay, where did you get this from? And it was just sort of like no one had an answer. And then today I'm kind of minding my own business, you know, looking at my tweets as my laundry is washing. And her name was Claire Hutchinson. I believe she works for the league, was kind enough to inform everyone in the thread that I was on that, hey, guys, you're allowed to have up to 85 players plus non-counters, which are like draft picks and territorial exemption players. So there could be up to 90 to 95 players at these mini camps, kind of putting that rumor to rest. And I think this just goes to show you that maybe – don't start posting fan rumors that you see online and expect them to be real. Find someone who knows what the heck they're talking about and get your information from them. Because this kind of took over on the weekend, and it was so silly, but it took on a life of its own. I'm just glad we can put it to bed.
Yeah, it just seems that, you know, the Riders keep getting popped for violations time after time. And I guess some of their fans were looking at other teams trying to pass the buck, kind of.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. Did you see a lot of comments about how, and we'll get into the Riders' fines later, but how the Lions were fined for something as well, and everyone's like, well, no one's talking about the Lions' fine. Well, the Lions are fined, and we will talk about the Lions' fine, don't get me wrong, but the difference was like 10 times, like the Riders fined like 10 times the amount. The Riders recently, under Chris Jones, have had a history of this, so of course that's going to be the story that gets the most ink, but yeah, I can kind of see where you're going. They're kind of looking to, you know, they're waving with their left hand so you don't see what they're doing with their right.
Exactly, and, you know, the BC Lions fine, like you said, it was a small fine, and you know, Wally Buono and company don't have the history of breaking the rules, at least recently, like Chris Jones has in Saskatchewan. So, the BC Lions did something wrong, but it's not quite to the magnitude or as often as the Riders have violated it.
So the Ticats made a bunch of moves in the aftermath of minicamp. They made a trade today. They acquired defensive back Khalid Wooten from the Montreal Alouettes for running back Sierre Wood, who we talked about a couple weeks ago that I was really high on, and I'm sad to see the Sierre Wood era of the Ticats end so soon. And defensive
what an era
end,
it was.
Oh, it was glorious, Mike. It was glorious.
Yes, it was.
They also dealt defensive lineman Denzel Perrine there as well, and they swapped draft picks in the 5th and 6th rounds. So the Ticats move up to the 38th and the 47th pick, and they sent the 39th and the 48th overall selections to Montreal. So they moved up one in both rounds 5 and 6. Who knows if that's important, but it is what happened. Just to me, it's the Ticats adding another DB, and they are really turning over every stone to try to fix that secondary. That was definitely the weakest part of the team last year, don't you think?
Absolutely, and I love it because they're identifying the problem, the main problem from last year, and they're doing everything they can to fix it. So, 30 dBs, 40 dBs, whatever they need to do to fix the secondary, to make it effective, to make it, one of the best in the league again. So I'm just happy that they're trying to fix this problem.
Yeah, they have something like 25 or so defensive backs still on the team. Holdovers from last year, new guys like Abdul Kane, who they brought in free agency, a bunch of rookies. Really looks like they're going to turn over every single stone they can to find a way to fix that secondary, and I applaud them for it. They clearly see what everyone else saw, that was an obvious weak spot. As I said, the weakest part of the team last year. And they're doing everything they can to fix it. And maybe one of these guys pops and is decent. Maybe he's not. Mm-hmm. But you can at least look at them and say they're trying to fix the problem. And to me, that's the most important part. You never know how good these guys are going to be until they get a chance to play. But at least they're doing something about it.
Exactly. And, watching some of the clips from minicamp, and they seem to be really focusing on tackling. Now, that's such a fundamental talent in football. It's one of the first things you learn when you're playing the game. But, last year the tackling was horrendous, to be frank, for the Ticats, and they seem to be focusing on that as well. So I'm happy about that.
The Ticats, after minicamp, have released a bunch of players. They had to get under, I believe the limit was 75 the team had to get under today. They released 14 players. They released defensive backs Elroy Douglas, who was a fifth-round pick of the team last year, defensive back Isaiah Lewis, defensive back K.J. Morton, defensive back Alex Ofori Jr., or Axel, sorry, Axel Ofori Jr., who was a guy that we were talking about, I think, a couple weeks ago. I said I like the name Axel. You made some crack about Axel Rose, and, well, the Axel Ofori Jr. era goes about as long as the Sierre Wood one. Unfortunately. And a fifth defensive back to release is Jordan Sullen. So they obviously saw these guys in minicamp, felt that they weren't good enough to crack the roster. So they're even trimming that massive list they have down already. They also released three wide receivers, Greg Jenkins, Nathan Palmer, and Royce Pollard. Two defensive linemen in Tanny Tupua and Giorgio Newberry. I think I pronounced those right. Two linebackers in Torrey Stewart and Mike Tavares. And two offensive linemen in Nathan Locke. And then probably the biggest name they let go, offensive lineman Jeremy Lewis, who played 3 years here with the Ticats, starting 39 games for the team, including 14 last year. So it looks like they're going in a different direction at right tackle. Mike, where do you think this team's headed at that position?
Well, I think that's, they have Olsen, who was out all last year, and I think they're really high on him. So I'm hoping that he is fully recovered and he's ready for a return at right tackle. And when he was in there before he was injured, he was a monster. So I got my fingers crossed that he's going to be the guy that is filling that spot.
So I think he is going to be the guy if he's fully healthy. I think that might be one of the things that this move indicates, that he's finally ready to come back from that. I believe it was a torn patella tendon suffered in the same game that Zach Collaros got hurt in all the way back in 2015. It also could mean that a couple of these offensive linemen that they they saw at minicamp could have shown them something that is earning them a chance to crack this lineup, perhaps as a reserve lineman, or perhaps they're going to get some one of these guys going to get a crack at the starting job. It could also mean, and I think this is the least likely of the three scenarios, maybe they're going for Canadian offensive linemen. Brandon Revenberg and Ryan Bomben, we both know, have played some tackle. I've seen this floated out there. I don't think this is what they're doing. I think it's more likely that the Olsen or newcomer addition is where they're going. But it would be interesting to see if this team could start four Canadian offensive linemen. I just don't think they have the depth to do it right now, unless, of course, this means in the draft with the fourth overall pick, they're going to be going with an offensive lineman. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But I think it means – what I'm hoping it means is that Olsen is healthy, but it could mean any of these three things.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about it right now, and you got the three Canadians in the interior of the offensive line, and then you got Lewis and Fulton on the outsides, and that seems like a pretty good offensive line to me. Now, the depth behind those players is a little bit questionable in my opinion, but if you have those starting five going for most of the season, I think Zach should be pretty well protected.
Yeah, I think the retirement of Matthew Girard hurt this team. Obviously, the release of Peter Diakowski hurt this team, at least when it comes to offensive line depth at being Canadian. But that's what the draft is for, and we got the draft coming up in less than a week, and I would not be surprised to see the Ticats go offensive line again early. Maybe not the first pick, but perhaps in the second round, but maybe they will go in the first round. Who knows? I want to wish Jeremy Lewis. I thought he was a decent player. I didn't think he set the world on fire or anything, but I didn't think he was terrible. I've heard a lot of people say good riddance. I don't see that. You don't start 39 games in this league without being at least somewhat good, and I hope he maybe catches on somewhere and continues to have a long career. He seems like a decent human being from what I can see.
Yeah, I wish him all the best as well, and it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up with the Argos.
Yeah, that's what some people are saying. Give it a week. He's up in Toronto, and hey, yeah, they need players too, and they just lost Jeff Parrott themselves, who just announced his retirement. Now, that's Canadian and Lewis is American, but without Parrott, that could really change what the Argos want to do with their ratio. They could have to start a Canadian on the offensive line, and Lewis would do pretty well with them, I think, especially re-teaming with Diakowski. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him applying his trade up the road in the not-too-distant future.
No, I wouldn't be shocked, that's for sure, just knowing the past that especially in the recent past, of all these Ticats players going to the Argos.
So that's it for Ticats news this week. Not a ton of stuff, more than I was expecting, but let's move on to some CFL talk, Mike, and let's kick things off. There's a lot here. I mean a lot. So let's start off with the fines. The Riders and the Lions were fined in the report that also outlined that there were no teams that went over the salary cap this year, which surprised a lot of people. Everyone thought Montreal for sure was going to go over the cap, but you know, they cut a few veteran players last year in Daron Carter and Kenny Stafford, some high-priced guys. Maybe that helped. Who knows? I was surprised. But the main thing out of all this was that both the Saskatchewan Roughriders and the BC Lions were fined. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the Leos or do you want to start with the Riders?
Let's get the Leos out of the way.
Okay, so this was a weird one to me. They were fined because it had to do with Adam Big Hill's contract. So we talked about this before, that when he was asked to renegotiate his deal following the 2016 season, I believe it was. He was asked to renegotiate his contract, and when that happened, it created an out of his deal that he could look at the NFL. Now, apparently, this for him to look at the NFL, it also meant that he was released. But then he wasn't added to the free agent pool, and I guess someone complained and said, well, if he's not under contract, why isn't he listed as a free agent? And the CFL was like, oh, yeah, good question. Now, if you remember, this happened a couple years ago with Solomon Elamimian. He was under contract to the BC Lions, was given a chance to get an NFL deal. When that didn't transpire, he was to come back to the CFL but sign with the Lions. And that option window that used to exist no longer exists. And this was brought up then, like, well, if he's allowed to opt out to go look at NFL opportunities, that means a free agent. And then Lions fans were like, but he's going to come back anyway, blah, blah, blah. So it seems like this is kind of a pattern that happens in BC, and I guess someone complained about it, and the league looked into it and said, yeah, you're right, this doesn't make any sense, and they were dinged with a fine, and I think rightfully so.
Yep, that's deserving of a fine. It's a sneaky move by the by the Lions. You know, I'm sure that they had a gentleman's agreement. Okay, you go down the NFL. If you don't make it, come back, you sign with us. And that's pretty much all there is to it, I'm guessing, which I'm sure happens with other teams as well. But I think they should be on the free agent list just because, you know, there's no guarantees that they're going to come back to the BC Lions. You know, there's no guarantees that they want to sign back with them. So they should be, you know, on the market as free agents if they're not under contract with the Lions. So I agree with the fine, and they deserved it.
You know what bothered me about this more than anything is Wally Buono's claim that the fine was related to them being too honest and admitting that this was something that was happening. They weren't fined because they admitted to it. They were fined because they did something wrong. And what he's basically saying is, well, we were open about what we were doing, and therefore we were fined because of it. So how many times have they done this where they haven't been informing people and have gotten away with it? This clandestine era of the CFL that we're still kind of in has to go away. There needs to be openness, period. And I've long advocated against releasing player salaries for reasons that I still stand by. But length of deal, I don't think, is an issue with something that we should see. And something that the very notion that he can come out and say, well, we were fined for being too honest. No, you weren't fined for being too honest. You were fined for breaking the rules. Don't try to obfuscate this by being like, oh, it's the same thing that we were talking about earlier with like, oh, watch me wave my left hand so you can't see what my right hand is doing. That's exactly what he's trying to get away with. No, someone needs to get in Wally's ear and be like, buddy, no, you weren't fined for honesty. You were fined because you broke a rule, period.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't honest. He didn't come out and say, this is what I'm doing. I'm breaking the rules. I mean, he got caught doing it. So I don't see what he's talking about with honesty. Now, I know that Jim Barker has, you know, done similar things in the past with releasing guys for NFL opportunities, you know, before their contract is up. But, you know, I think that they were upfront about it and they were on the free agent list once they were released. So, yeah, he's not being honest. He's being a little sneaky. That's what I think.
Yeah, and I know that Wally comes from that old school, we keep everything in house and no one knows anything. But in the modern, this modern CFL, we have to get away from that. And I think
we're trying to. Yeah, but it seems like these guys, like, you know, Buono and Chris Jones, and they just want to keep the man behind the curtain. You know what I mean? Like, just not reveal anything. And this is what we need in the CFL. We need openness and you know, honesty from the clubs and all that good stuff, so the fans know the information and the fans can get all this good stuff out of the product. So all this behind the curtain stuff needs to end, in my opinion.
No, and like I said, I've been against opening up player salaries to the public, but I'm starting.
Yeah, and I'd agree with you on that.
Yeah, but I'm starting to be like, you know what? If we have to open the entire box and show everything to stop these things from happening, I might be all for it because crap like this cannot go on anymore. It's 2017. It's not 1955. We can't be having these backroom deals, these secret contracts, the whole idea of, oh, there's a contract, there's a signed contract sitting in a desk drawer. It's a big joke when it comes to talking about CFL. You hear people say it all the time. We can't have, but that's not how this should work anymore. It should be open, and we should know what's going on. We shouldn't have to dig to find out about crap like this. It's frankly, I'm sick of it, and I think this old guard that has this old notion of how things should be, like Ed Hervey, who got fired because he didn't want to be open with people. Like, I don't necessarily agree with that, and we talked about that last time, but at the same time, you need transparency because transparency will build the fan base. Like, I know it's, yep. I'm not sure anyone's going to come to games if they know what Ricky Ray makes, but being able to engage in things in an open and honest way, I think helps build the fans up as feeling like they're a part of this, as opposed to all these shady things happening behind the scenes that we don't know about, and then everyone's kind of left in the dark. I just think it's wrong.
Yeah, and you look at things like fantasy football. The teams need to release who is playing. They can't be secretive about who's injured and who's not and all this stuff. If they want to advance the product, and one of the ways is with fantasy football, and they have to be open and honest about who's playing, because if you don't know who's playing, then it's pretty hard to play fantasy football, right? So that's just one thing. That, you know, fantasy football is huge in the NFL, and it can be huge in Canada too, but they just need to be more honest about stuff.
That DraftKings deal that the league sparked last year was a major coup. But you're right. If fans are watching games, or even guys who aren't fans who just want to gamble are wanting to participate in this, and they don't know who is and isn't going to play, that you might as well not even have fantasy sports anymore.
No.
Like, it takes way too long to find out if guys are going to play. How many times have you set your fantasy lineup? We've been in what? We've been in the same fantasy league, what now? Three? I think we've done three seasons. How mm-hmm. many times have you turned on a game and gone, oh, you got to be kidding me. So-and-so's not playing. I got him in my lineup. It happens way. That never, ever happens in the NFL playing fantasy football. I've been playing NFL fantasy football for over a decade. Never once have I went to sit down to watch a game and gone, oh, he was a late scratch. If he's a late scratch, they tell you like an hour before kickoff.
Right.
Finding out that information on the CFL is almost impossible.
Because they know how important fantasy football is to the league in the NFL. So the CFL needs to follow that lead and really crack down on these roster changes before the game and the injured list and all that stuff. So it's really important. It may not seem important to people who don't play fantasy football, who just want to watch football. Love the CFL, want to watch the game, but to a lot of people, it's really important, so they need to crack down on that.
Fantasy football and the gambling aspect of it is one of the reasons the NFL is as big as it is right now, in my opinion. It's one of the easiest fantasy games to play because you basically sit down once a week and set a lineup, and the CFL is pretty much the same. Their games are very self-contained, 2-3 days a week, and if fantasy football could get bigger, I think the CFL could get bigger, and I understand that coaches and GMs and all that stuff, Their job is not to make it easier for people to gamble on the league. I understand that. But if you want to grow the league, this is a way to do it. And by keeping something as simple as who is and isn't going to play secret, it's just a waste as far as I'm concerned. It just means that the fantasy aspect is it's going to go away because people are going to not be able to know who's playing. Then they're going to not want to play these games.
Yeah, they're going to be like, well, why bother? I'll just play the NFL where I know who's going to be involved in the game each week. And it's just a huge deal to get younger fans. You know, the CFL wants younger fans. This is one way to do it. So smarten up. Come on.
All right. I did not expect our conversation on the Lions fine to delve into a rant on fantasy football, but you never know what's going to happen on Podskiwi. We go all over the place. The Riders were also fined numerous reasons. One of the – I got three written down here. That was this time. We got them practicing with players that were on the suspended list. We got them recruiting a junior player who wasn't in their territory. And, of course, the one that everyone's talking about, the $5,000 fine for Chris Jones talking to Johnny Manziel's publicist. So those Johnny Manziel rumors seem to be gaining a little bit more traction here, eh, Mikey?
It seems that way. I mean, why is he talking to his publicist if there's no interest there, or that, you know, whatever. It's just some people think that maybe reporters or the league is picking on the Rough Riders, but I don't see it that way. I think that, you know, they're cheating over and over and over again. And yes, I understand that you want to do everything you can to make your team the best that it can be, but it just looks bad on them when they get caught over and over again. So it's just a bit silly.
I love the mental gymnastics that the more homerish of Rider Nation is. Well, Justin Dunk still is wrong because they didn't get fined for working him out. They got fined because Jones talked to his publicist. He wasn't working him out. It's like step by step, people. Like, obviously, this is what they could fine them for because this is what they could prove. Now, do you really think Chris Jones is talking to a publicist without then going a little bit further than that? Come on. Like, give your head a shake. And this isn't, we're not here to brag on the Riders, not at all. Like, they got caught, just like the Lions got caught, just like other teams have gotten caught in the past. They got caught doing something wrong, and they're fined for it. This is now over $100,000 in fines that this team has accrued during the Chris Jones era. It's going to be put up or shut up time for this guy this year, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, you can't keep making your franchise look bad and not have results. Now, last year was a gimme year for him, I believe. You know, he inherited a pretty awful football team, but now it's go time. I mean, now it's you have your mark on this team. Now they want to see results. There's a lot of pressure in Saskatchewan every year, but you know, moving into a new stadium, the way that they got rid of Durant, who is obviously, you know, a fan favorite. There's a part of the fan base that never really liked him. I know that, but you know, this guy won you a Grey Cup, and you know that they don't get that many Grey Cup victories in Saskatchewan over their 100 years or so existence. So there's a lot of pressure on Chris Jones to win and win now. And if it doesn't turn out well for him this year, you know, you never know what could happen.
Yeah, I think he's the honeymoon period is over with him. I think the new stadium will help with attendance, because whenever you open a new barn, fans will show up. But if by the end of the season that team is once again last place in the West, out of the playoff picture, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find Chris Jones coming back for a third season as the football czar and head coach and water boy and guy who cooks the hot. He's got his fingers in everything. I think you'd be hard-pressed to see him come back for a third season if they don't make significant improvements this year. I'm really interested about the practicing of the suspended players, because you put guys on the suspended list for a reason. Either they're suspended for a violation, a league violation, or they're put on the suspended list because you'll see it actually in training camp a lot. Guys, Brandon Banks, for example, last year was put on the suspended list when he didn't report to training camp right away because he was dealing with his personal issues down in the States. So you see that. But to me, it's if they're practicing with suspended players during the season, that's also a circumvention of the salary cap, because a guy who's on the suspended list isn't a guy that's supposed to be at practice because he's not technically getting paid. Well, he's getting paid, but he's not getting paid. His pay's not counting as a salary cap. Another way that they're trying to circumvent the cap rules here, and to me, I think if this is going forward, if you find teams doing this, and I'd say the same thing about the Ticats, yes, I would about the Riders or anyone else, you find teams practicing guys who aren't on their roster that are getting paid towards a salary cap, I think you should lose salary cap space, to be honest.
Yeah, that seems like a really shady move there, playing, you know, using suspended players. It's just another thing that Chris Jones has added to his list of shadiness. It's been a rough ride for him in Saskatchewan ever since he got there. I think their team will be improved, but how much, I'm not sure.
Speaking of rough rides in Saskatchewan, we're still going to stick with the Riders. Justin Cox, their most outstanding rookie nominee last year, was cut almost immediately after reports surfaced that he had been arrested once again for domestic violence. Third time in the last two or so years that he has been arrested for a domestic violence thing. Good on the Riders for getting this done really quickly. There's obviously no way that you can keep a guy like this. There should be a zero tolerance. There apparently is a zero tolerance policy for this. There should be a zero tolerance policy for this. You don't need guys like this in the league. I don't care how good he is. Good on them for getting rid of him. But I also want to make sure that people understand, I don't blame them for bringing the guy in. There's a guy out in BC that everyone loves named Chris Rainey, who himself has had domestic violence issues in the past. He's been cut from two NFL teams because of it. He came up to the CFL because it was his last chance to do something. And he's been a model citizen, so people can turn their lives around. Justin Cox is a young guy. He made some mistakes as a young guy. That's not in any way, shape, or form me trying to make light of this or in any way trying to give him an out for this at all. He did what he did, and he deserves the repercussions from it. But there's a lot of people out there who are saying, oh, the Riders were wrong for bringing him in to begin with. I don't necessarily agree with that. Yes, he had his problems in the past, and they're horrible, and they are abhorrent. But what if the kid did turn his life around and did say, you know what, that last one was the last one, I'm gonna be a better person? Then it would. I just believe in second chances. That's. Mm-hmm. I want to believe in the goodness of people, and we all make mistakes, and none of us are perfect. But now he's obviously done this a second time, third time. Obviously now he's run out of chances, and I have no problems with him getting rid of him. But the idea that they shouldn't have brought him in to begin with, I don't like that. I just agree that I think that everyone can change who they are, and I was rooting for people like a guy like him or anyone who's done something stupid as a youngster and wanted to sort of try to change the way they are. I thought maybe he could. He didn't. Good riddance.
Yeah, and the CFL has had a history of bringing in players that are troubled, have been in trouble with the law before. You know, you go back in the way back machine and you think of a guy like Lawrence Phillips, or, you know, there's been there. I think there was a receiver with the Argonauts when they won the Grey Cup in 2004. I can't think of his name, but yeah, the league has had a, you know, a second chance league kind of thing. And I agree with you that everyone deserves a second chance and people can change. But when it becomes a reoccurring thing over and over and over, then you got to part ways. And that's what happened here. Justin Cox can't seem to, you know, turn his life around. And and good on them for letting him go right away, because you just can't have that kind of publicity on your team.
And you don't want a guy like that around. Like, we, domestic violence, violence against women, violence against anyone, really. It's not something that we should be accepting. You learned a long time ago, don't put your hands on another person. It's just, keep your hands to yourself. It's one of the things you learn as a kid, and everyone should abide by that. And you know what? Justin Cox can't keep his hands off women, so he deserves all the scorn he's getting right now. And this is the last we'll probably ever talk about him. So let's move on and talk about our last bit of Riders news. We're turning into a Riders podcast, much like we turn into an Argos podcast every now and then. We got to talk about them. This is a lot more fun, though. This is something that caught my eye today, and I got a chuckle. And I know you love it when we talk NFL quarterbacks coming to the CFL. And this news was that apparently the Saskatchewan Roughriders, long before they tried to get Vince Young into Regina, reached out to none other than Michael Vick. What do you think about this?
It's an interesting one. That's for sure. They're really trying to find the. I mean, Chris Jones really has a hard on for these former star NFL quarterbacks. It seems Manziel allegedly, Vince Young, and now Michael Vick. So I guess their philosophy is, you know, bring in an NFL star and he can do it in the CFL, but we all know that that's not the truth. The Michael Vick thing specifically, that's an interesting one. I'm assuming he's around maybe the same age as Young.
Little older. I want to say he's 36 now. He was the top pick of the 01 draft. I think I'm 35. I want to say he was born the year before I was. So I'm going to go saying he's 36. Young is 34. So he is close, but he's a little bit older.
Okay, so and you think about Michael Vick in his prime, and if he played in the CFL, I mean, that would have been insanity. I mean, the guy was just a running back at the quarterback position. He was crazy to watch. But bringing him now, I know that he's played in the recent past, maybe a year or two ago, more so than Vince Young. But I don't know, man. I guess they're looking at anyone they can to bring in, but everyone deserves a second chance after that, you know, the dog fighting stuff, and that kind of soured me on him. But I wouldn't have a problem with him bringing him up. But obviously it didn't work out, and I'm sure Michael Vick has a ton of money to sit on, and I'm sure he's happy the way his NFL, well, no, not the way that his NFL career ended, but I'm sure that he's happy financially right now and doesn't feel the need to come to the CFL to prove himself.
No, he officially announced his retirement just a few months ago. At the Super Bowl, I think it was, when the Falcons were there. I think he officially announced that he was retired from the NFL. Man, I remember this guy at Virginia Tech way, way back. They were playing in the national championship game against the Florida State Seminoles. And just that year, Michael, you just watched him play. And he, you know, we're going to do our video game ratings later. This man was a 99 in every aspect. He was just so much fun to watch. It didn't really translate to the pros. He is a guy that I think could have succeeded in the Canadian Football League. Obviously wouldn't have made anywhere near as much money as he made in the NFL. But man, oh man, his skills were something else. The guy had a cannon for an arm. He could run. Batman, you got to remember, this was Michael Vick back in the early 2000s. That's when, you know, the way quarterbacking in the CFL has changed over time. He could have come up here and been Doug Flutie, because he had the same skill set, but he was faster and he was bigger. It was, oh, I would have loved to see him up here. I just, people talk about, oh, the Riders signed Vince Young to sell tickets. Michael Vick would have sold tickets. No doubt in my mind. Michael Vick, that's a guy that the Argos would have brought in, and you would have seen BMO sold out, Skydome sold out to watch this guy play if he ever played in the CFL. But, alas, it was not meant to be, but it's just one of those what ifs, and kind of funny that the Riders keep reaching out to these older NFL quarterbacks. Maybe this is the reason the Ticats put Colin Kaepernick and RG3 on the neg list, so they can trade their rights to the Riders for maybe something decent.
Yeah, that's a big possibility. It's just funny that we've gone years and years without any mention of any, you know, big NFL star coming to the CFL, especially quarterbacks. And then this year, just like Kaepernick, RG3, Manziel, Vince Young, Michael Vick, it's just been a weird offseason for former NFL star quarterbacks, you know, rumors coming to the CFL.
Speaking of weird, the weirdest thing that I think happened since you and I sat down last was the trade that the Argos and the Alouettes made that sent SJ Green from Montreal to Toronto for a sixth-round pick in the 2017 draft and a conditional pick in the 2018 draft. SJ Green is coming off a torn ACL. I understand that. But in no way, shape, or form can you not look at this trade and go, the Toronto Argonauts, Jim Popp, absolutely fleeced Kavis Reed. If SJ Green comes back at 85 to 90% of what he was before he got hurt, this is an absolute grand theft larceny by the Argos over the Owls to get him in double blue. And now all of a sudden, you look at the Argos, who a couple months ago we were saying they got no coach, they got no GM, no players want to go there. Now we're sitting here on the cusp of the draft and near the start of the season, and the Toronto Argonauts look pretty damn good.
Yeah, they're starting to put it together there. Trestman and Pop are working hard to try to make this team respectable this year. And you never know, but they could be a good team. Now, SJ Green, as we all know, has been one of the best receivers in the league, if not the best, for the past 5 years or so, maybe longer. So, listen, I've watched his training videos, and he looks pretty good. I know that running on a field is way different than being in an actual game. But, you know, he looks like he has decent speed, and he looks like he's recovered pretty well from that injury. So if this guy, like you said, if he's 90% of what he was, he's still going to be a very effective player in a system that he knows very well, the Mark Trestman system. So, you know, they're trying to get comfortable in Toronto. They're trying to surround themselves with players that they've worked with in the past, SJ Green, Brandon Whitaker, all that stuff. So, yeah, I like the move, and, you know, a six-round draft pick, you know, yeah, it's they could get lucky, but I doubt it. That's a pretty low draft pick. So he basically got traded for a bag of balls, you know?
This is a salary dump, right? It has to be.
Yeah,
because it has to be. Okay, the Montreal Alouettes traded a first-round pick to get Vernon Adams.
Yeah.
And the Argos trade a sixth and a conditional pick to get SJ Green? That's insane. Drew Willey got a first-round pick. Drew Willey.
I know.
The Argos traded
a
first-round pick for Drew Willey. They get SJ Green for a sixth? Are you out of your mind?
Well, it seems different in the CFL. The high, you know, popular players that have proven themselves over the years seem to get traded for nothing, basically. And then the weird circumstances of Drew Willey and Vernon Adams getting traded for first rounders. It's a weird league when it comes to trades and draft picks and all that stuff.
This trade reminds me, and I know people, I've heard you hate when I talk about the NFL, but this reminds me of when the New England Patriots traded a fourth round pick to the Oakland Raiders for Randy Moss. And then Randy Moss went out there the next season and broke the record for single season touchdowns. Tom Brady broke the record. Now, I'm not saying Ricky Ray is Tom Brady. Ricky Ray is obviously older, but Ricky Ray is basically the Tom Brady of the CFL, if you really want to think about it. But I'm not saying Ray is good at Tom Brady, but in CFL, very, very similar type careers.
Similar, yeah. Yep.
But, like, you give him an SJ Green, and they already had Anthony Coombs there. They brought in guy they brought in? Jeff Fuller. You mentioned Brandon Whitaker's there. Mark Trestman's offense is starting to look pretty damn good. And this team that I was writing off 2 months ago, man, the East is starting to look like it could be a four-way dogfight instead of a three-way one.
I'm hoping so. I want to see the East be really competitive. And, you know, we named the players that they brought in, the well-known players, but I'm sure Pop is going to find some guys that we've never heard of, and they're going to come into camp, and there'll probably be a couple of them that are really good players and are starting roster players for the Argonauts that come out of nowhere. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to say the least with the Argonauts this year.
Yeah, the start of the season, that first week, Ticats at Argos, I'm gonna be there. We discussed it. My dad said to me this weekend, I want to go to an Argos game. And it's like, well, they play the Ticats week one, 4 o'clock on a Sunday. He's like, oh yeah, we gotta go. Text your buddy Richard. We call him Sausage, but I'll leave that story for another time. He's like, text Sausage and tell him we're going. So I text him, got the thumbs up. So I will be at BMO for that for the season opener, and whew, there could be a fireworks factory there.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it's a similar outcome as last year's first game.
Absolutely. As much as I want the East to be competitive, and I'm starting to get some respect more and more for the Argos this season as the days go by. I want to see the Cats go in there and pound them, of course. Speaking of the Argos, one last bit of Argos news before we move on. They brought Cleon Lang back after his NFL opportunities, I guess, dried up after his short stint with the Ottawa Redblacks. And before that, when he went and signed with the Miami Dolphins, he's back in the double blue. And we were just talking about him. What was it? Last episode, I think. Maybe episode before, talking about where he might end up. I did not think it would be in Toronto, but he's back with the team that drafted him. And, man, that defensive line is starting to look mighty nasty. And they released Ricky Foley, and boom, bring in Cleon Lang, who is obviously at this point definitely better than Ricky Foley. And there's your Canadian on the offensive line. Brought in Alan Michael Cash. They got Sean Lemon there. This Argos front seven is that defensive line is looking pretty nasty. Could be a tough day week one for Zach Kolaris. That offensive line is to get their stuff together.
Whew. Yeah, it'll be a test for them. They've really done well on the defensive line, I think. You know, subtracting some people, adding some people. They got some talent on that defensive line, and it's, you're right. It might be scary for the Ticats all season long.
Might be scary for the East. That is a nasty, nasty, nasty defensive line. The Eskimos have a general manager, Mike. Brock Sunderland, the former assistant general manager of the Ottawa Redblacks, is now the general manager of the Edmonton Eskimos. Are you as surprised as I was that the Redblacks would allow him to interview for the job?
I was a little surprised. I mean, this is the guy that they've groomed for a while now. He's obviously an up and coming GM. Yeah, you think that if he's under contract, they would have wanted to hold on to him. But I guess they did the right thing for, you know, letting him go, letting him take a step up and be the GM of the Edmonton Eskimos. That's a pretty good job to have. I mean, Ed Herbie did a good job here and really built up this team. So I think he's taken over a pretty darn good team, and I think he's going to have success. He sounds like he's more than willing to play ball with Len Rhodes and, you know, open up the locker room, do all that stuff that Ed Herbie refused to do, but he better bring in some good players and he better win. So yeah, I like the move. I think that's one of the only moves that they could make. And it's interesting that the Redblacks are paying I can't remember what the details were, but are the Redblacks giving some compensation to the Eskimos, or the Eskimos giving some compensation to them?
So the Eskimos are giving half of Sunderland's 2017 salary to Ottawa as compensation. It's half of what Sunderland's salary would have been as the team's assistant GM. That's it. Okay. That's it for compensation. People were expecting players, maybe draft picks, and this is the first hire under this new rule that compensation needs to be talked about beforehand. It's weird. I sit here and I sat last year. We discussed the Jason Moss thing, and I ripped Ottawa for saying they're wrong. He's going for promotion, shouldn't be compensation rewarded. I still stand by that. This, however, is a totally different situation in that this guy was hired at the end of April. He's deep into draft preparation. Although if you listen to Marcel Desjardins, their staff hasn't gotten together to discuss the draft, which, I'm sorry, is complete BS. If you're 2 weeks away from the draft and your staff hasn't sat down to talk about a plan, you're either lying or you're incompetent. And I don't think Marcel Desjardins is incompetent. So we'll leave it at that. But, it's an odd – we don't often see general managers or coaches fired this late into the – like this late after one season, this early before the start of another. So it's definitely a different situation, but I don't know. I don't think Ottawa should have been compensated anything for Sunderland being hired because it's a promotion, but at the same time, I also wouldn't have faulted them if they would have said, or if any of the teams would have said, absolutely not, you're not talking to any of our guys. We're knee-deep in preparation for our season. It's not our fault that you guys can't get your house in order. You mentioned, however, opening up the locker room. I don't know what Ottawa was like opening up the locker room, but I will say this. They do have their players come out and interact with fans after the game on the field. I'd been out a couple of times to games in Ottawa, gone on the field afterwards. Last year I met Antoine Pruneau after the Ticats won that game in Ottawa in overtime. So they're very open about interaction with the fans and the players, at least. And I got to think, with Sunderland being the assistant GM in Ottawa when that went into play, I got to think he'll bring that to Edmonton with him. I think it's wonderful. You see these fans and these players really connect with one another, and I think that's how you help you build a fan base. I think you see a lot of these people who are now diehard Red Blacks fans because they got to meet guys like Henry Burris, and they got to meet guys like Chris Williams or Ernest Jackson or Jermichael Dean or Sir Vincent Rogers. Like, they get to meet these guys, and I think that's pretty cool, and I think you're going to be seeing something similar to that in Edmonton. Or I just think it wouldn't shock me if the Eskimos are now way more open than they absolutely have been. I think something like this could be simple as fans get to come on the field after the game, talk to players. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just the way the league is going, like we talked about earlier, and it needs to be done. It needs to be done, even with a strong franchise like Edmonton, who has good attendance and all that stuff. It could always be better, and that's one way to try to increase the viewership of the team.
I will say this, though. Brock Sunderland did say that his primary job is winning. And I guess he didn't realize why he was interviewing and was given this job, because apparently winning isn't enough in Edmonton for the man in charge. But I just thought that's kind of funny. No, unfortunately, Brock, winning is not your only job.
No, it is not. And if the attendance doesn't rise, or like they don't make as much money or whatever, you got to think that down the road, Rhodes will be the next one to go. But that's down in the future, I'd say.
Okay, Mike, last little piece of CFL-related news. This one just came out today. The Colts, the Indianapolis Colts, the NFL, released former BC Lion Alex Bazzi. He was signed in like January or February by the Colts. Didn't really get a chance to even show what he could do. So now he's out as a free agent. Probably, I would suspect, is going to try to land an NFL deal somewhere else. But if not, could come north of the border. Don't think he's going to go back to BC. I think BC's probably pretty strapped against the cap. They brought in Chris Williams. Mm-hmm. They traded Jovan Olufoye because of cap reasons, essentially. Not sure they're going to have enough room for Alex Bazzi. So if he doesn't land somewhere down south, some team in the CFL, one of the eight other franchises, I'll say seven because I don't think the Ticats would go after him either. I think they're pretty happy with their 1-2 defensive end combination of Chick and Tracy. I can't see them going after Alex Bazzi, paying him starters money. I personally don't see it. So, but there is going to be a team out there that could get pretty darn talented player. Where do you think he might end up? I'm assuming he's probably going to get an NFL shot somewhere else. But if he comes north, where do you think he's going to go?
Try to think of who is in need of defensive end help. Now, like you said, the Ticats aren't. They won't pay Bazzi starters money to be a rotation guy, that's for sure. The Argos are set pretty well. You know, it's tough to maybe Saskatchewan, just because they'll bring in anybody, it seems. So, yeah, I'll go with the Riders just for the heck of it.
Yeah, the Riders is probably a pretty good bet. I could see the Argos maybe bringing him in. They have Sean Lemon on one end. I can't recall off the top of my head who they have on the other side. So, I don't know, maybe he could end up there. But I think I'm with you. I think the Riders make a lot of sense for Alex Bazzi. So, that's it. That's the CFL news for the week. But before we get into questions and video game ratings, we got one other thing to talk about, Mike. It's the CFL draft. Can you believe that the CFL draft is 6 days from today?
No, it's crazy. Whenever the NFL draft comes up, you know, the CFL draft is right around the corner. So first day of May, and time just flies, buddy. It's before we know it, we'll be starting the season.
So speaking of the NFL draft, we saw one Canadian drafted into the NFL. That was Justin Senior, who was the top-ranked player on the Scouting Bureau board. He went, I believe it was in the sixth round. So I can't imagine he's going to be a guy that we're going to see fly off the draft board come next Sunday. A couple other Canadians, Jeff Gray, I think his name is, the guy from Manitoba, signed. I'm trying to think of who else was out there. There were a few CFL guys that signed, or draft prospects, if you will, mm-hmm. that signed with some NFL teams, three or four. I knew I forgot to write something down, and that was the stupid thing that I forgot to write down, was which guys were signed. Oh, hold on. I can pull it up right here. Yes, Justin Senior, as we said, was drafted. Eli Anko, Jeff Gray, I got that one right. Woohoo. Oh, and of course, Anthony Auclair, the tight end from Laval. All those guys were snatched up by some NFL teams. So good luck to those guys, hopefully making their NFL dreams come true. And if not, they can find maybe a home for themselves in the CFL. But they're guys who are going to fall down draft boards now. So that opens it up some other players to rise up draft boards. Ticats have the fourth pick in the draft this year. What do you think this team might do? Ken Austin's kind of been all over the place. His first year as GM, they had the first overall pick. They went with defensive lineman Lyndon Gaydosh. They've since traded him. The next year, they had the eighth and the ninth pick, and they picked Bo Landry and Evan Gill. Landry just recently left the team via free agency. Gill is still here. Then the year after that, they traded their first-round pick to get Ryan Bomben. Last year, they traded up in the draft to grab Brandon Revenberg. So is offensive line something this team's going to do? Could Ken Austin trade his first-round pick again this year for a veteran player somewhere else? Danny Vandervoort, who's a guy we've talked about on the show before, maybe he's an option for the Ticats. We didn't talk about the Andy Fantuz stuff because there's nothing really to report, but Ken Austin did say there should be some good news about that coming soon. So Fantuz is probably going to be coming back. No better time than to grab a guy who many consider a copy of Fantuz is kind of the second coming of him. Maybe grab him, have the guy who everyone's comparing him to, you know, mentor him and bring him along. What could you see this team doing? And it seems like Ken Austin kind of could go anywhere here, no?
Yeah, it's a really tough one to answer. The CFL draft is so different from any other draft in any other league. But I've always liked the idea of drafting Vandervoort, the receiver. I haven't seen him play. But he is highly regarded by, you know, all the scouts and all the people who make up their mock drafts and all that stuff. And you never know with Fantuz if he's going to be back, if he's going to be able to play to perform the way that he did before the injury. And if he comes back, then Vandervoort could be the backup to him for a couple of years. So I like that move. And I'm always for drafting offensive linemen, you know. I just think that you can't have too many good Canadian offensive linemen. So if they drafted an O-lineman or if they drafted Vandervoort, I'd be happy with both those results in the first round.
Well, you've pretty much said all I was going to say. We've talked about this before. We talked about last time how much I love my Canadian wide receivers. And, yeah, if they were to go offensive linemen, wouldn't shock me, wouldn't upset me either. They got the fourth pick, so they're going to get a decent talent regardless. What they do the rest of the draft, it seems that this team is the starters are pretty much set, I think, on this team for the most part, so you're probably going to see them draft a lot of depth, draft some special teams guys. We're probably going to see a couple linebackers drafted like we always do, maybe a DB or two, maybe a defensive lineman. This team doesn't really have any major Canadian holes to fill, as far as I can see, looking at their depth chart, looking at their roster. So I don't think we're, like, outside of maybe, I think you go receiver, offensive lineman, or offensive lineman, receiver with those first two picks. And then my philosophy would be best player available, and you just go and nab a guy that can play some special teams and contribute there, because that's where a lot of these guys are going to end up making their money.
Yeah, and it's huge for us to restock with the special teams guys. You know, a couple years ago, we were on fire with the special teams guys. We were, you know, Brandon Banks was taken to the house, and we were recovering onside kicks and onside punts and all this crazy stuff. That kind of fell off last year. So this year would be nice to replenish that talent pool and get some blockers out there for Speedy B, get those holes open and let him do his thing. So it's really important to get guys that can play well on special teams.
Well, we've also seen this team lose some really good special teams players. Justin Hickman and Brandon Stewart a couple years ago left. This past offseason, we saw Anthony Woodson and Bo Landry, as I talked about. They both left to go elsewhere. So this team has lost. Bakari Grant was a great special teams player as well. So this team has lost some special teams players over the last few years. So it's so never a bad thing to try to replenish that stock there, because it's the most forgotten phase of the team, but it's a damn important one.
Oh yeah, especially in three down football, it's hugely important.
And who knows? Maybe they could find a kicker. I haven't heard anyone talking about any right. kickers in this draft, but who the hell knows? Maybe they could find a kicker in the late rounds, and the team mm-hmm. could go Canadian at kicker punter, which could open up an American somewhere else. And who knows? It's that's what's the fun thing about the draft is, like, you see a bunch of mock drafts, and I appreciate all the guys out there that do them. I could not do one. I could not do one for the NFL, and it's a lot easier to follow that than it is to follow Canadian mm-hmm. College sports. So everyone out there who's running mock drafts, I love reading them, but you can't put too much stock in them because you never know. Go back last year and look at all those mock drafts. I guarantee you none of them had the Ticats taking Brandon Revenberg, even with their regular pick, let alone trading up to get him. So it's you just never know where anyone's going to go. And it is, like you said, a very unique experience, the CFL draft. So, let's get our popcorn ready, get our sodas and our brown pops going for Sunday night. We got some drafting to watch. And are you going to be watching along with everyone, or are you going to follow along on Twitter?
Of course, I'll be whatever coverage they have. I don't know if they're just going to do the first round again this year on TSN and then go to the internet. But I do have Sunday off, so I will be watching, all of it.
Yeah, same here. We'll have some fun interactions with them. Maybe they'll draft a bunch of linebackers and have another meltdown like I did a couple of years ago.
That's always good for entertainment.
Oh, always, always, always. So, Sunday's draft day, and then 3 weeks from that, we're talking the start of training camp. Boy, season comes before you see it, and, man, it's already May. Soon it'll be June, and all those stupid "is it June yet" hashtags can go the hell away.
Yep, we won't have to see that anymore. And I don't know, man, I'm really looking forward to this season. I just, every season I always get, pumped up, but I just really hope we have a great season this year with less controversy on the field with the refs and just awesome play. So, yeah, I'm just pumped.
All right, so we got some questions to talk about right now, and then we got our video game ratings before we let everyone go. So let's get to these questions. Joe, our buddy, Joe Pritchard, USFL Tecmo on Twitter, always asks us great questions when he throws us a bone, and this is no different. And his is a simple one, Mike, and it's a pretty darn good one. Is this a make or break year for the current regime in Hamilton? What do you think?
That's a great question. It's a tough question as well. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to go yes. The team hasn't performed as well as it should in the last couple of years. Now, we had that run where we were in, Grey Cups in a row, and it was a very good start to his tenure, Ken Austin's tenure. But I think that they need to be above 500, and they need to have a certain level of success this year. I don't necessarily think that he'll get fired if that doesn't happen, but, man, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him this year, I'd say, just because of the, not just not winning over the last couple of years, but the freakouts on the sideline and, last year bumping the ref, and then the year before that bumping Dave Stell on the sidelines. Things like that add up. And I'd have to say, I think it is. I'm going to say, yes, it is a make or break season for Ken Austin this year.
God, you're such a typical Ticats fan, man. Jeez, I don't think this is anywhere near a make or break here for this team.
No,
I don't think so. I think the only way this regime, the Ken Austin era, ends or is even on shaky ground is if the Ticats go like 3-15, or like they would have to completely bottom out. The man's been here 4 years. They've made the playoffs every year. They've hosted a playoff game every year. That's extra revenue, which is not something that you can sneeze at. I know, and I'm with you, man. And I'm with everyone else. Last year was a huge disappointment. 7-11, yeah, they finished second in the East, but 7-11, no, you're right. And everyone out there who's complaining, absolutely, that unacceptable. This team should be this should be a 10-11-12 win team every year. And I think every fan base looks at their team and thinks that. But there's no reason for this team not to be competing with the Calgarys and the Edmontons and the BCs as the best team in this league. But I don't think this is a make-or-break year for this regime. I think 4 straight years in the playoffs, I don't see this team not making the playoffs again this year. I'd be shocked if they didn't host a playoff game this year. And maybe that's my black and gold tinted glasses. I just think that too much good has come of this. I also think that Ken Austin has his fingers too inside this organization. If you were to let him go, then you would be completely starting over because you're letting go your GM because you're not going to keep Eric Tillman if you let go of Ken Austin, or Eric Tillman's not going to stay if you let go of Ken Austin. You're losing your vice president of football operations. You're losing your head football coach, and you're also probably then therefore losing your entire coaching staff. And I just think that this team is still set up where they can be competitive. I still think their Grey Cup window is open. I don't think this team has yet reached the point where it's time to blow this thing up. There's their best players, Luke Tasker, Terrence Tolliver, Zach Calero, Simone Lawrence, Ted Laurent, they're all under 30. All their best, Craig Butler's under 30. Courtney Stevens, under 30. Their offensive line, those Canadian guys, they're under 30. Like, this is still a young football team, relatively speaking. I don't think this team has reached its peak yet. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, they're going to go 18-0 and they're going to win the Grey Cup. But I don't think that this year is in any way a make or break for the team. I think if they're competitive and they're in the playoffs and they're hosting a playoff game and they have a shot to win a Grey Cup, that's where I see this team. I think unless it completely bottoms out and the guys just tune Austin out and this team goes 1-17 again, that's the only way I can see this thing coming to an end. I don't think there's any way that Ken Austin is not in charge of everything come next season.
That's very good points. But I think that if he sticks with his philosophy of constantly passing the ball, never running it, and it doesn't work out again this year, I think there could be some trouble ahead for him. If Zach continues to get absolutely pounded in the backfield, if he, you know, we look at the offensive line now, and I think it's improved. I think, you know, they haven't really done much, but I think that getting Fulton back was a huge thing, and I think it will be improved this year. But if it's not, and our star player gets injured again because some offensive lineman missed a block and he got nailed from behind, I think it could be the end of Ken Austin's tenure here in Hamilton. Listen, he was brought here to win a Grey Cup, okay? We're in a 9-team league. It's different. Different than a 30-team league. Win a Grey Cup. That's the bottom line.
Well, I don't disagree with you there, but look at his 4 years, man. 2 Grey Cup appearances, 3 final appearances. Last year was a disappointment. I am not going to underplay that at all. But I'm going to say that that's an aberration and not – this team, the first – they went 10-8, 9-9, 10-8. I think that is the – that's where this – that is – yeah, I agree. I agree. But it's meh, and in those times they were second in the East twice, and they won the division, and they got to 2 Grey Cups, and they very easily could have won one of those championship games. It's not like this team is – when you watch a Ticats game, do you remember – of course you remember what it was like in 2005 – when you turned on a Ticats game and you said, I'll be happy if this team scores a touchdown, let alone wins a football game. You look at this team now and you expect them to win. Our expectations are that this team should win. And I think they're set up to win. Now, if we could come back here in 30 weeks after the season is over and I could sit here going, you know what, Mike, you were right. This was a complete disaster. Another sub 500 season. Barely making the playoffs or missed the playoffs or whatever. Yeah, maybe it is time for Kent to go. But I just look at the team now, and I look at last year as an aberration. I look at last year in the East completely, and we're going to get to talking about East versus West in a second, as an aberration because no team had a healthy quarterback all year. The Ticats amongst them. Last year's one of those years where I think you just flush everything down the toilet, and I don't think it's going to repeat itself. For Christ's sakes, man, an under 500 team won the freaking Grey Cup last year. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, this is the CFL. You never know what could happen. So I just look at last year. I don't think that's emblematic of where this team is headed. I think you got Zach Calero's healthy going into training camp. I think that'll make a big difference. I just look at this team. And again, like I said, maybe it's me looking at it with rose-colored glasses, but I don't see any way in which this team does not finish 500 or better in 2017. I just don't.
No, I just don't think you can base, you know, oh, okay, the team sucked in 2002 and they're better now, so, you know, he's fine for another 10 years. I'm not saying you're saying that, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they sucked in the past, but it doesn't mean that it can't be great now. Like, you know, it doesn't mean that they have to be swimming in mediocrity. 9-9, 10-8. That's mediocre to me. Yes, he's been to Grey Cups, but have they won them? No, they haven't won a Grey Cup. So another 9-9 season just isn't good enough for me.
I'm not sitting here saying 9-9 is what I'm hoping for, but if 9-9 is, well, 9-9 would have won the damn division last year. 9-9, they host the East Final. They finished 9-9 last year. They probably go to the freaking Grey Cup. You know what I like? I'm again, I'm not saying that I'm happy with what we saw last year. You remember how disgusted I was with the CFL as a whole at the end of last season. A lot of that was due to how crappy the TyCats were. It wasn't fun to watch. It wasn't entertaining. It was garbage, and I didn't like it. But now we're on the it's spring. We're talking about renewal. And you know what? I've renewed my faith, Michael. I just believe that this team is destined to be better than they were last year. I think a lot of teams in the East are destined to be better than they were last year. We're not going to see the Calgary Stampeders go 16-2 again. You know what I mean? We're not going to, that's not, or 15-2-1. That's not going to happen. Like, I see the East being better, and because of that, I see the Ticats being better. And maybe I'm an idiot, and I'm only looking at things nice because it's May and the season hasn't started yet, and I'll be sitting here in August cursing them along with you. I just don't, th I think we're too early to be talking about the end of this Kent Austin era in Hamilton. That's all. I just think it's a little bit too early. If they finish sub 500 again, and then we talk next year, I think even if they make the playoffs, another sub 500 season, I think then yes, we can talk about why is this team falling below expectations? Why can they never get above mediocre? Then I think it's a question. I think this year though, I think he's had one bad season. Yes, we can talk about mediocre, but he's had one bad season. If he ha doesn't have another bad season, I think this is premature. But if he does, then I think this is a fair question. I just don't think he's going to be out the door if they have another bad season. They have to have a terrible season. I'm talking Argos last year, terrible, where they start hot and they lose 10 of their last 11. I'm talking it has to go completely off the rails, I think, for him to be gone.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. But they've been mediocre in a pretty terrible division, so we'll see. I'm not saying that it's going to be a bad year. I have high hopes as well, and I hope that we're 12-6, 13-5, and we won't have to talk about this in the near future. So I hope all the best. Obviously, I'm a huge Ticats fan, and I hope that we really turn it around this season. But if we don't, it could be Kent could be in the hot seat.
I said in 2013 that Ken Austin would lead this team to a Grey Cup, and I'm not coming off that stance. I think he still could get it done, and I would not be surprised if they got it done this year. Enough of Ken Austin. Let's talk about the East as a whole. This is another question we got. This one comes from Bill on the Three Down Nation comment section. He asks, do you think the changes to the teams to date has tipped the balance a little between East and West? Overall, I sense the East is stronger than last season, but still not strong enough for Eastern teams to win more games on average over their Western counterparts. So I think we'll both agree that the power still belongs in the West, right?
Absolutely.
But do you think that the East has gotten a little better over the offseason?
I say it every year. I think the East has gotten better, so I'm not going to fall for that again this year. I think no, they're not better. They're not even close to the West, because that's what it's like every single season for the last 20, 30 years. Yes, I think that there's some improvements there, but I'm still going to say that the West will be a total dominant division over the East again this year.
Here's what I'll say. If the quarterbacks in the East stay healthy, the East will compete. If they don't, then they won't. And vice versa. If Bo Levi Mitchell, Mike Riley, and Jonathan Jennings all get hurt, the Calgary Stampeders, Edmonton Eskimos, and BC Lions will not win a bunch of football games. Last season, every team in the East finished below 500. The year before that, we had three teams finish with 10 wins or more. Why was that? All of their quarterbacks stayed healthy. This is a quarterback-driven league, like every football league is. So, if the quarterback's knees, if Zach Kolaros plays 18 games, if Trevor Harris plays 18 games, if Ricky Ray plays 18 games, if Darian Durant plays 18 games, these teams will be better. That's it. I'm not going to say that they're stronger than the West. I don't think they are. I still think the West is the power in the CFL. I think it'd be idiotic to say otherwise. But if the East has healthy quarterback play, their teams will be better. They will win more games, not more in total, but they will win more of the East-West games. The teams in the East will be better. It's as simple as that. Quarterback play dictates who is and isn't good. If the East has healthy quarterbacks, they will be better, period.
It doesn't matter if Joe Montana and Doug Flutie or whoever is playing for these teams, they will always be worse than the West teams. That's just the way it is. That's the way it's been forever, and that's the way it always will be.
Cynical Mike showing up today.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe this will get you in a little bit better mood. We're going to do our CFL player ratings for video games this week. And before I throw it to you to get this fun started, I want to mention that Adam gave us our running back rankings a couple of weeks ago. We missed last show doing them because we had so much to talk about. We're getting to the wide receivers this week. But I wanted to give Adam a shout out and let you know what his running back rankings were from the last time we did this. He had CJ Gable at an 88, Moses Madu at an 81, Brandon Whitaker at an 88, Terrell Sutton as an 87, Brandon Rutley at 82, Jeremiah Johnson at an 85, which I think is low, but that's just me. Andrew Harris at a 92, John White at a 90, Keenan LaFrance at 77, and Jerome Messam at a 94. So thank you, Adam, for giving us those rankings. I'm sure we'll be hearing about who you have in your wide receiver rankings. So, Mike, the floor is yours. Lead the way, good sir. What are we doing this week?
Brandon Whitaker is higher than Terrell Sutton?
He had Brandon Whitaker higher than – and Jeremiah Johnson.
Sure.
Yeah.
I disagree with you on those ones, Adam, but always awesome to get your list. Okay, let's get into it here. We're going to do the East Division receivers, three from each team. Who do you want to start out with? Might as well start off with our team, Hamilton.
Let's do it.
For the list, I got Tasker, Tolliver, and Timms. Tasker, I got a 94. Now, that might seem a bit high, but this guy just is the man on the field. He's one of my favorite players. He catches everything that's thrown his way. He gets open. He's just an awesome, awesome, reliable receiver. I got Tolliver at a 90. He's an up-and-coming guy. Now, lots of these guys, I'd say if we did them again at the end of the season, they'd be higher. I think this Tolliver is going to be a huge breakout season for him this year. So I got him at a 90, and I got Timms at an 84 just because of the unknown factor. I think that he has a lot of talent. He showed it in the playoff game that he can make plays, but I think, you know, an 84 is a fair number for him.
Okay, it looks like you and I are going to be a lot more in sync this week than we were last time we did a running backs. I think it's going to be a lot more about the, like we had with the quarterbacks, we're one or two off of each other. Because I got Luke Tasker at a 92. I would have him higher, but those injuries, he's never really played a full season. So until he can do that, sits at a 92. But same reasons that you have him as high as you did. It's he's clutch. He makes all those catches. He's a dynamo. Terrence Tolliver I have as a 91. Again, for like you basically just said everything I said is the reasons why I ranked them, so I don't really have to go into much. And Timms I have as an 83, for the exact same reasons you have. So not a lot of differentiation there between our three Ticats receivers. Now, obviously, I think we know those guys better than we know everyone else, although we get to see everyone play. But let's see where we go with the other teams. But so far, so good. We're off to a good start.
Yep. Next team is that terrible blue team down the QEW. I got S.J. Green at an 87. Now, that would be higher if he wasn't coming off that devastating knee injury. I think he can still perform, though. You know, that's an unknown, but that's just my opinion. I got Fuller at an 86. Now, this guy can be a big-time impact player if he just would stay healthy. And I know that's, you know, you'd say that about every player, but this guy has a history of injuries. So, when he's on the field, when he's healthy, he's one of the best in the CFL. But I got to give him an 86 just because of those injury problems. And Payton, I think I gave him an 80. That might be a little low, but, you know, he's a speed guy. We saw in Ottawa that he can make plays, but just not enough for me to give him a really high rating.
Here we are again with some really close ones. I got SJ Green at a 90. He would be a 95, 96 if he didn't have the ACL tear, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe the top-ranked receiver in the league, if not pretty darn close to it. But that ACL tear does knock him down a bit. But I still got him in the 90s because I still think he's a dynamite player. Jeff Fuller, I have an 85 for all the reasons you said. You're doing a great job of explaining why the guys are rated where they are. And Khalil Payton, I have as a 79. So I agree with you. I don't think it was low. I think 79, 80, 81 is pretty darn good with where he'll be. He's a guy that has a lot of potential, I think, but we haven't seen it. We haven't seen him do it fully. So until we see him that, I think we got to put him. I believe he's my lowest ranked wide receiver out of all the guys on the board. So until we see more from him, I think we can't really give him the benefit of the doubt yet. But hey, he could put it together a monster season, and he could rise up these rankings pretty quickly.
Yeah, for sure. Now we'll go to Ottawa next. You got Spencer Ellingson in Sinopoli. Spencer, I gave an 85. I think he has a lot of potential. He's he showed that he can play ball last year in Toronto. Ellingson, I got him as a 93. He's a proven commodity in the league. Kind of similar to Tasker, makes those clutch catches, always makes the big plays when needed, as we saw in the Eastern Final a couple years ago. And Sinopoli, I gave him an 89. Similar to Ellingson, you know, he's a proven commodity, done well. So one of the best Canadian receivers in the league. So what do you got?
Okay, so for Spencer, I got an 83. Again, for all the reasons you said, the guy, if we were talking about return men, because of his speed, I'd probably have him rated a little higher. But as a receiver, haven't seen a ton from him at receiver. I've liked what I have seen. But he, you know, he's had his injury troubles too, and moving to a new team, and he's a little bit unproven. But he's a veteran, but he's not a guy that you definitely can know. Oh, this guy's going to do it. So 83 for me for him. Ellingson 92, and my decision was him and Luke Tasker to me are the exact same player. Greg Ellingson is not in Hamilton because Luke Tasker took his job. So I could see ranking Ellingson maybe a little bit higher because he's done a little bit more, stayed healthy, especially in Ottawa. But I think him and Tasker being around the same makes a lot of sense. And with Brad Sinopoli, bingo, bango, bongo, 89 as well. It's not because I don't think he deserves to be a 90 or anything like that. He's not very fast. And the lack of speed really hurts when it comes to ranking receivers. If he was a tight end and we were talking like Madden in the NFL, probably in the high 90s, but as a receiver with that speed as a slot guy, got to take him down just a wee bit, just misses out on being a 90 player, got him at an 89, so this is starting to get kind of eerie, Mike, with where we got guys going.
Yep, and try to continue that trend in Montreal. We got Nick Lewis, Ernest Jackson, and Cunningham. Lewis, I got him at 89. He played awesome last year. He still has it. He's still a great player. He's still one of the best possession receivers in the league. You know, he can still run over guys. He can still get open, even though his large size. So I'm kind of kicking myself for not giving him a 90 now, but I'll stick with the 89. Ernest Jackson's my highest rated receiver. I got him at a 97. Now, he was just probably the best receiver, one of the best receivers, if not the best, in the league last year, so that's why I got him so high. And Cunningham showed that he could be a breakout star this year. He made a lot of big plays last year for the Alouettes. I still have him at 84, but I could see that number going up immensely this year.
Not a lot of disagreement here, Mike. Nick Lewis finds his number at 91 with me. Same reasons that you had him at 89, but he was just so darn good last year. So surprisingly good for a guy who's getting up there in age. I felt, you know, probably his last hurrah. Let's give this guy a 91. He deserves to stick in the 90s. Ernest Jackson, so close. Got him at a 96. Completely agree. Probably the best receiver in the East, at least, last year, for certain.
Yeah.
And one of the top five or six receivers in the entire league. So he had to be my number one. He was the benchmark. I said no one can pass Ernest Jackson on this list, so when I set his number at 96, no one else could top it. No one really even came close. Got a couple 92s, but yeah, Ernest Jackson was my top guy. He was the East MOP last year, so number one receiver by far. And I have Cunningham at an 82, similar to the reasons you have him. Speed demon, dynamo, but let's see what he can do. Let's see if he can turn that potential into more concrete, more consistent production, and we'll see him hit the high 80s to perhaps the low 90s if we do this again next year. So looking at those receivers, man, not a lot of disagreements. So and I felt this. I think I remembered when we talked about the running backs. I think I said to you that I felt like my receivers rankings would be a little higher, and that I think we would be a little more in lockstep when it comes to that. I think the biggest difference we had was I think it was S.J. Green. I think you had him at an 87, and I had him at a 90. Not a big difference.
No, everything was pretty close this time around. And, you know, I don't know. Oh, of course, we're going to do the West wide receivers. I don't know if we'll do anything after that because, you know, those are the sexy positions that we reviewed already. But we'll see. If the people like it, then maybe we'll continue on with it.
Well, I actually have an idea, and I will talk to you about it after we close up shop for the day. That's what we call a tease in the podcast business. But I did have an idea after we did the last of the receivers and something that could be fun. And we'll see if it works. And if it does, we'll go with it. If not, we'll just do the receiver, the West receivers, and call it fun. Because the season's about to come pretty darn soon, Mike. And don't have a ton of time to be talking the funny stuff.
Exactly. You got to get down to the serious business.
So be like Adam, man. Everyone out there who's listening, throw us your receiver rankings. Even if you don't have to do them all, you can do your team. You can do one from every team, whatever. You can do guys we didn't even do. Just I'm interested to see what other people say when it comes to ranking these guys and where they hit. So please feel free. Hit us up. Social media. When this goes up on 3 Down Nation, throw them there like Adam does. I want to see more of this. I think this is a fun little off-season distraction, and I thank you very much for coming up with it, Mike.
Well, I am the genius, like the old wrestler in the 80s.
Oh, so you're the brother of Randy Macho Man Savage?
I am Lenny Poffo.
Wow, good for you. Yeah. How's what was Macho Man like?
Intense.
Yeah. Okay, there is our required wrestling reference of the week. So that's it for this week. Remember, everybody out there, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to ask Mike or myself a question or just tell us we suck, whatever, you can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, as we do every week, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
You can find me at JoshSmith_82, and you can always post your question. You can always post your questions in the comment section on 3 Down Nation. One last thing before we go, I just want to mention that I will be on this week's episode of Rouge Radio, helping those guys preview the 2017 Ticats. So check them out. I think their show comes out Thursday or Friday. I'm recording it for them on Wednesday night. So look for that later in the week and give a listen. It's a darn good show. I don't know if you listen to it, Mike. I do. It's a pretty fun show. It's one of the first CFL podcasts I actually listened to. So, yes, hey, if you're out there, you listen to us, you like us, you want to hear more of me, head on over to Rouge Radio this week. You'll get to hear a little bit more of your host with the most, Mr. Josh Smith.
The former Swagger and Stagger show, I believe.
It is indeed. So, yeah, head over there this week. Listen to me talk some more Ticats. So that was episode 72 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Ooh, yeah.
Dig it.